Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every Monday to Friday from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis. How are you?
I'm well. I've been Christmas shopping.
Have you?
Yesterday, I took the day off and went Christmas shopping.
The weather outside is not so frightful.
I'd much rather work. I would much rather work.
You didn't have a good time?
No. Okay. I was in Red Bank, New Jersey, Lambertville, New Jersey, Manhattan, New York, Jersey City, and there's a bunch of garbage in different packages all over that people are trying to sell you.
That would explain why we're selling so many gift certificates to the restaurants this year.
Well, it put me in a Christmas spirit.
Yeah.
Here's what I want to do. Jackie Naylor, Jackie Naylor, as you've heard us talk about on the show, is going to be performing a New Year's Eve concert at the Crossroads Theater. Tickets to this concert are about $150 a piece. It's basically a private concert. Most people are dining at our restaurants before or after, with some packages that we're running there. But I've spoken with Ms. Naylor, and we're going to give away two tickets to the Jackie Naylor concert, value $300.
Very generous.
Thank you. And the way to get these tickets is we're going to give them to one of the people that emails us from the broadcast.
Going to randomly pick an emailer.
And one that emails us from the podcast. So email us at Shari, S-H-A-R-I, at restaurantguysradio.com. And just say that you want to go see Jackie Naylor, and maybe you can win a couple of tickets. So we'll see.
And so that's two sets of tickets. One's going to go to a podcast listener. One's going to go to a live listener.
That's New Year's Eve gala concert. And again, it's Shari at restaurantguysradio.com. Reminds me of a New Year's story that we were bartending once, and our friends were bartending at a bar in the neighborhood, and after work they came over, and I'll always remember something they said that has guided my feeling on managing a bar for the rest of my life.
It definitely informed my decision when I opened a restaurant and as to how I was going to do it.
Two of our friends came over and said, "Yeah, it was so busy tonight. God, we were just making drinks all
night,
nonstop.
Making drinks so fast. We were just the fastest bartenders. We're the best bartenders in the world because we were making drinks so fast and getting to our customers so fast."
I was like, "Well, that's really cool, man. We had a pretty busy night here. We had a pretty busy night here, too." It's like, "Yeah, we were busy for like 2 hours. We were so busy we didn't have time to charge anybody for drinks." Note to self.
Never be that busy.
Don't hire this friend should he apply for a job. But
very important to make sure your bartenders are never that busy.
But people do weird stuff in restaurants.
People behaving badly in restaurants.
Yeah.
I'm going to make a new series.
That'll be our topic for this segment.
I'm going to do a television series, People Behaving Badly in Restaurants.
Well, we have a lot of restaurants now have moved to having cameras in the dining room and cameras watching every diner to look at the expression on your face as you eat your dinner. We haven't gone there yet.
Yeah, but we do have some cameras in our common areas.
Well, especially because we have a second floor restaurant now.
So like in the elevator lobby and things like that, there's a camera, a security camera to make sure everybody's safe.
And because there's no one in that lobby, you come down to the first floor and then you walk out so the bartender can see into the lobby of, you know, who's coming up, who's going down.
Well,
and you can also see
in that lobby, we also have, you know, it's at the lobby to Catherine Lombardi. So kind of as an entrance to Catherine Lombardi, there are some pictures of my grandmother and my grandfather and some old vintage pictures from
that we've restored,
of course, anywhere from, you know, the pictures are anywhere from, you know, the 20s to the 50s, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
And there are various pictures at various times.
These are black and white pictures restored in custom metal frames.
Absolutely.
And
they're very attractive.
And
very, very attractive, apparently. Too attractive. That's what I'm thinking. Maybe they're too attractive.
And our maitre d' comes to us and says, "Dude, picture of Mark's grandmother's missing from the elevator lobby.
And so, of course, we're thinking, you know, the back broke or something. It fell.
It's gone. It's a nail on the wall.
It's gone. It's an empty nail on the wall.
So we say, hey, wait a minute. We've got that security camera. And so for the first time ever, we looked at our security camera.
Can I tell you something? One of the most fun things I've ever done in my life. Okay, let's see. Was it there at 6 p.m.? No. Was it there at 12 p.m.?
Guy leaving the bar.
No. Was it there at 6 a.m.? No. Was it there at midnight? Yes. Was it there at 3 a.m.? No.
We got the point.
Was there at 1?
We got
Yes.
So we get a picture of the guy, this guy walking up to the painting.
It's beautiful. He walks out of the elevator, comes down from dinner, okay, which amazed me, because what I naturally thought was somebody ran in off the street, grabbed it, and ran away. No.
This guy
comes down the elevator from the restaurant, walks three-quarters of the way out the door. You see him kind of look back in, look at the picture, look over his left shoulder.
He actually looks at the camera but doesn't realize it's a camera.
Look over his right shoulder, sees no one's there, grab the picture and run out the door.
Yeah. And so
we've
contacted the gentleman.
excuse me. You have something of ours.
You have a picture.
Hello?
You have a picture
of my grandmother.
Of your grandmother.
You have a picture of my grandmother. What exactly did you plan to do with that?
I don't know.
I just think alcohol makes people do some stupid things. And this isn't a 22-year-old kid. This
reminds me, a
grown man.
Reminds me of the other picture that was great when we were actually sitting down, you and I. And the maitre d' comes over and says there was a wedding going on. And the maitre d' comes over and there were, you know, people had gift bags and
oh, no. This was not a gift bag, though. The bag that the person had, he'd gotten some to-go food or something like that. So it was one of our bags.
The guy has a bag next to his chair. Maitre d' walks by as he's serving, looks down and sees a bunch of our silverware in his bag.
Yeah, steak knives, silverware.
Maitre d' comes over and says, the guy on table 21... he stole a bunch of silver. There was a bunch of silver in his to-go bag. I said, well, what did you do? He said, I stole it back.
I took it back. So this is hysterical. We're watching the guy during the course of the night, because just for fun.
Right.
Okay. Well, now he looks in this to-go bag as he's getting ready to leave.
Where he's put the silverware, and he knows it's missing.
Okay.
Someone's stolen it.
And he's angry. Okay. He's like, at the guy sitting next to him, he's like, you stole my silverware that I stole. What are you doing? You can't steal my silverware that I stole.
That was great. I really did enjoy stealing it.
I'm always amazed at the things people will do in that kind of forum. I mean, it's a restaurant. You would never consider, you know, and some of these people who take things like this and salt and pepper shakers. It's people who would never take something normally under
in a normal. They wouldn't take a candy bar off a shelf of a shop,
right?
Mm-hmm.
They would never consider that. But somehow, some way.
Well, there's also a difference between the souvenir, like you want to steal the mug from the bar, because it has the bar's name on it, is very different from stealing your grandmother's picture. Quite a find.
It's not exactly the towel from the Hilton, is
it? Don't you want to see what else that guy has in his house? Don't you imagine his living room or his garage?
I want to see what you did with the picture of my grandparents. I want to know where you put it. Is that up over your mantle? Like, my grandparents were quite a handsome pair here.
Make spaghetti with us. All right, listen, we have coming up one of our favorite food writers and food lecturers, Anthony Giglio, who's going to talk to us about the Mr. Boston Guide and his work in Boston on a recent tour he took of Italy with a bunch of people. We'll be talking with him in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest today is Anthony Giglio. Anthony Giglio is our favorite food journalist. He's a food journalist, sommelier, author of Cocktails in New York and the Mr. Boston All-New Official Bartender's Guide. He just recently returned from a tour of Italy, and he joins us today.
Anthony, welcome back to the show.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Doing very well. Now, Anthony, I know you're out of the listening area and didn't get to hear that first segment, but I'm just curious, has anybody ever stolen a picture of your grandparents off the wall?
No. Shame on them. What happened?
Oh, just
only. You know what I'm thinking is maybe they're long lost cousins of yours. we caught somebody on our security camera stealing a picture of Mark's grandmother.
My grandparents, very funny.
They must be an attractive couple.
Yes, exactly. I presumed that, you know, I thought maybe I felt kind of badly. Maybe he didn't have grandparents. He never knew his.
The guy didn't even look Italian.
So he walked away with mine.
How do you explain that? How do you explain that? Love that security camera. Paid for itself that day. Now, Anthony, for New Year's, you normally throw your New Year's fete. I have to say, Anthony and I used to be neighbors in Jersey City, and I would occasionally come home from whatever I was doing on New Year's Eve, and I'd be walking home from the train station in a tuxedo and would see, like, through Anthony's window, him and his wife and his friends having a fabulous cocktail party, and they'd be like, look, there's Francis. Let him in.
It's true. You know, it's funny. We just sent the invitations yesterday very late. That's why you haven't gotten them yet, guys.
No, I got it.
Right. I didn't get mine yet.
Yours is coming, Mark. We call it the Fancy Pants Ball because when we were single without kids and we had this, you know, this very fancy party, everyone had to dress really formal in black tie, and here we were in our little box in Jersey City, our 600-square-foot apartment, throwing this, you know, fancy, you know, we actually pulled all the furniture out of the living room, and we'd have dancing and stuff. It was really funny. And it's called the Fancy Pants Ball, which is now, like, you know, devolved into a kids, grandparents, and anybody on the street who wants to come in party.
So now you can wear pretty much anything as long as it doesn't have chocolate fingerprints on it.
Exactly.
Now, you have written, I want to talk to you about cocktails. We have started pouring at Catherine Lombardi our seasonal cocktail, which is the Tom and Jerry. Do you have any favorite seasonal cocktails, Mr. Boston and yourself?
I do love the Tom and Jerry. I mean, I'm a big fan of eggnogs, even though they're totally out of fashion, or at least were out of fashion for many years. I'm a big fan of rum punches in general.
We can bring them back, Anthony. We have that power.
I got my blast from Stage Left yesterday with the Tom and Jerry recipe. I was thrilled to see going out to hundreds of thousands of people, and locally at least.
Actually, that's right. We sent an email out to people on the restaurant mailing list that just gave people a heads up on what we're doing. But we also included a recipe for the Tom and Jerry. And if you want that, I'll put it up on the restaurant guys, restaurantguys.com. It's a hot drink that's really cool to have around the holidays. So.
Yeah, and it really is an eggnog made with eggs.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that crazy?
Could you imagine? Who'd have thunk that people would begin putting eggs in their eggnog again?
Well, you know, the eggs are very dangerous, guys. You have to know this.
I mean, we'll just drown them in alcohol. They'll be fine.
Exactly.
Now, let's talk about, you've recently written about who has better cocktails, Cambridge or Boston. Now, you were the longtime wine columnist for Boston Magazine. What's the Cambridge and Boston cocktail rivalry, and why are they different?
I like to think that Cambridge is the Berkeley to Boston's San Francisco. I mean, it's a very literate crowd, a very bookish crowd, if you will. Big university nightlife, you know, lifeline there running throughout. Very small. You could walk Cambridge in a few hours, you know, from north to south, east to west, versus Boston, which is pretty, you know, pretty huge by city standards. And what I discovered, I confess, you know, the big secret, of course, in Boston Magazine is that I have to pretend I live up there. So I'm from the very, very south end of Boston.
Yeah. right on the banks of the Hudson.
I had never been to Cambridge more than, you know, a couple of times. And my editor, Jane Black, who actually, she's such a prolific, I don't know how she has time to edit Boston Magazine. She wrote today about maple syrups in the Times.
Yeah, it was a great article.
Jane said, you need to go check out Cambridge and see what's going on over there. I hear that there's amazing cocktails being made at least a half a dozen bars that are all within a few blocks of each other. And so I spent a week up there, which was very hard work, guys. Very hard
drinking
work.
Cocktails in Cambridge?
Drinking cocktails in Cambridge. And I really did. What I also loved was that not only were they drinking good cocktails, but the connections between the bartenders were so clear that it was kind of like the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon game. Like, you could just point back to, like, a handful of bartenders who have spawned all of these acolytes that are now either working together or opening bars together or, you know, switching shifts with each other. Like, there's actually a lot of incest between the bars. Like, you'll have bartenders working at rival bars certain nights a week. It's pretty funny. They bring their followings with them.
But you see the same thing in New York City right now.
Among the best cocktail bars, I think you see the same thing in New York, don't you?
Yeah, I would say that, but I didn't expect to find it there, especially between, what I meant to say was the drastic difference is that there'll be bartenders working in Cambridge one night and Boston the other, which to cross the river is, you know, it's not like, you know, taking a walk down the block. It's, you know, it's it is a different city. Technically, they consider themselves different.
Well, I want to talk. In a moment with you, Anthony, about cocktails throughout the country, and I think it's something that was really percolated in New York and maybe San Francisco, and is really changing the way that people are drinking around the country. We see that in Food and Wine magazine today. They talk a lot about cocktails and all the food trends. We're talking about them, and I want to find out what kind of cocktails they're making up there, and I also want to talk to you about maybe a recipe that we can throw up on our website besides a Tom and Jerry. We'll be talking more with Anthony Giglio in just a moment. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1125.
Floors, walls, and lighting. The Restaurant Guys learned long ago that the key to making a space look great are floors, walls, and lighting. There's no tougher test to a carpet than a busy restaurant. From design to installation to cleaning, the Gillespie Group has handled the Restaurant Guys restaurant floors for more than 10 years. Designers know what looks great on the first day. Bob Gillespie knows what will continue to look great year after year. Gillespie doesn't just install carpets. Their quality clean division has experience and expertise to keep that carpet looking great. In our business, it's the details that matter. In your home or office, the details make a lasting impression. The Gillespie Group handles projects from large hotels to offices right down to your living room. Look down. Go on, look down. Right there by your feet. You see. You need the Gillespie Group. Call them at 732-254-5508 or visit them at thegillespiegroup.com. Tell them the Restaurant Guys sent you and get a free cleaning with any installation. Remember, it's Gillespie for carpet and flooring, 732-254-5508.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest today is journalist Anthony Giglio.
So, Anthony, you were talking before the break about the whole Cambridge-Boston feud over who's making better cocktails. Do you think that that is something, a trend that's going to continue across the country as, you know, maybe it becomes more difficult for smaller, trendier kinds of restaurants to emerge in cities that the outlying areas might produce, you know, the new trendy thing?
As a resident of Jersey City, that's long my hope. for underdog cities outside of great cities. I think that if you can have a great wine list, which takes a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Can distinguish itself for a great wine list, let's say. But it's very hard for any restaurant to distinguish itself or a bar to distinguish itself for great cocktails. But it can be done, and it may not involve as much of a war chest as it would to have a great wine cellar. So I think I'm not going to say easy, but it's a more affordable and practical way to stand out from the pack, although it does take, some serious mixology to pull it together.
Well, I think one of the things that happens is when restaurants aren't capitalized, and what's happening, let's just take Manhattan as an example. I think Center City Manhattan right now, you just have to have such a huge amount of capital to begin something like that, mm-hmm. that, you know, maybe somebody who's opening on an outlying area who doesn't have that same capital, maybe they're, you know, looking for that new way to get their niche.
But I think that's Brooklyn, not Jersey City.
Right.
What do you think, Anthony?
Sorry, Anthony.
I think you're right. Well, that was a point I made in that piece in the November Boston Magazine, was that in Center City Boston, or, you know, the downtown, let's say, all around the Common, most of the great restaurants are owned by hotels or corporations, you know, restaurant groups. So although they have the most dynamic spaces and maybe extraordinary wine lists, that's all because of deep pockets, but they tend to be very corporate crowds with gold cards. And at night, the scenes are...
Let's not talk badly about the corporate cards with gold, the corporate types with gold cards.
All I mean is that's just a very different feel from the neighborhood bars that I found in Cambridge, where there was like these extraordinary mixologists behind these bars that looked like they wouldn't serve anything. You know, let's put it this way, like if you know Hoboken, it would be like the Wilton House, like this everyman's bar that serves more bud than anything else, and yet there's these bartenders serving amazing cocktails in these very, plain settings.
Well, when after the news, we're going to talk more with Anthony Giglio. We're going to talk a little bit more about cocktails. We're going to talk about a recent trip he had with Italy, and you can find out how you can go on a trip with Anthony Giglio to Italy. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1130.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with The Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Today we're talking with Boston Magazine wine columnist Anthony Giglio. He's also the editor of Cocktails in New York and the editor of the Mr. Boston All-New Official Bartender's Guide. Anthony, we were talking before the break about cocktails in Boston versus Cambridge. But overall, as we see this cocktail thing, I'm really thrilled about. We've been talking cocktails for a long time, you and me, since basically we first met. But it's nice to see that it's a trend that's sort of here to stay. And I think that we're seeing bartenders sort of using the same philosophy as chefs. As you look as a writer, as a journalist across the country, and you look at what makes a great cocktail program as opposed to what makes a, well, not necessarily serious cocktail program, do you see differences? I mean, I see bars like, you know, they have, you know, 9 different martinis that you order by color. And to me, that's
And somebody's
not,
putting a lot of energy into it.
But that's not what we're talking about. Will you draw the distinction?
Well, here's an easy distinction for me. Stop calling anything that's not a martini a martini. I mean, any bar purist will know that. Like, any good cocktail menu will say cocktails or mixed drinks, but martinis are one drink. I think, you know, what throws me or never ceases to amaze me is that because anything served in a triangular-shaped glass is considered a martini. You know, it's a cocktail glass, frankly, but they call it a martini glass today. Anything in it is a martini, which me sets amateurs from professionals. Anyone who's calling, like, tonight's martini of the day is the cucumber, pickles, you know, kumquat. that right away, I know it's amateur night. I went to a bar in, where was I, in Seabright. Elements, the lounge, which is the complete name of the restaurant. John Bon Jovi's brother owns it.
Uh-huh.
And he was behind the bar and looks just like his brother. And I said, can
you
I
said, hey, little runaway.
I said, can I have your cocktail list? And he said, do you mean our martini list? And I said, is it a list of one?
I was hoping for your cocktail list,
well,
actually. Is
why
what
don't
I was,
you, for our listeners who may not know, why don't you define what is a martini and what is a cocktail?
Well, I'll get hate mail for this, but a martini technically is a gin-based concoction with only a hint of dry vermouth. But vodka has long since supplanted gin as the spirit of choice.
We can let it be called a vodka martini.
It would be a vodka martini. Mm-hmm. If you go to a good bartender and just say a martini, he's pulling the gin from the speed rack.
Well, and also, I mean, I think that people specify what kind of gin or vodka they want usually in their martini. Mm-hmm. But I agree with you.
I'll tell you a funny line I heard from Dave Wondrich. He said he's a spirits writer for Esquire, and he called vodka the skinless, boneless chicken breast of the spirit world. Which I thought was really funny. I sent some friends to the Pegu Club in Manhattan, which is a fantastic cocktail bar.
Sure.
And he secretly complained to me that there weren't any vodka drinks on the menu. And what was the deal with that? And I said, you know, in great cocktail bars, you know, vodka pretty much is, for me, like, for example, when I went to Boston 2 years ago, they wanted to do a non-alcoholic section. And I said, A, alcoholics don't buy this book, you know, like if they want non-alcoholic drinks.
Right.
Or people are afraid of having anything mixed in the house aren't going to buy this book. And I don't think people are going to buy this book who want to make virgin drinks. But basically, we could put a note in the intro that says, any of the vodka cocktails made without vodka will be perfectly flavorful.
They taste the same.
Exactly, because all you're doing is adding alcohol.
Right.
No flavor whatsoever.
Well, I guess, you know, it depends on the vodka. But if it's a really good vodka, by definition,
why mix it with pickle juice?
It should have, it's, well, it
that's
should.
Good, kumquat.
Well, I think that the cocktail purist and what, I guess our position is, if you're just looking to add vodka, well, you might as well just add grain alcohol.
Exactly.
Because you can use less of it than a vodka and accomplish the same effect.
If you don't like liquor, don't pretend. We'll just put juice in the little glass.
You know, when we're talking about the other spirits, we're talking about spirits that are flavored, and they're flavored in one way or another. And the purpose of making a cocktail is to mix those flavors, not just suppress the flavor of alcohol.
Exactly, exactly. I love heated debates I've gotten into with vodka purists who talk about, you know, the flavor of the mouthfeel as they're ordering a Bloody Mary.
Right. Well, I guess what Anthony's saying is that if you like vodka and you like to drink vodka, and you can tell the difference between Ketel One and Smirnoff and Sky, I'm sure that you can. But once you put it in the tomato juice, I don't know that you can. I mean, I got a pretty good palate, and I can't.
No.
You know.
No, I mean, I've been in many vodka tastings, and you know, and I think what the best spirits professionals will tell you is that it's really about perception of mouthfeel and finish. There's really no overt flavor unless the vodka actually has serious flaws, like by definition, mm-hmm. if there's any cogeners left in it, that would leave maybe a hint of either sometimes you get vegetal tones or green tones or creaminess, but like it's really about a mouthfeel. So when say that vodka is nice and creamy, you're not tasting cream, you're feeling a sensation of something very velvety and lush on your palate. Like vodka tasting is about whether it finishes hot or cold, or whether it finishes lush or very thin. I mean, that's really basically what it comes down to. You're looking for the plushness of the spirit. People equate quality with how plush it feels on the palate. Mix that with any juice and it's gone. It's like champagne in a mimosa. It's ridiculous.
Right. It doesn't. It's just bubbles and that's it. It's gone.
Yeah, but have you ever put really, really, really bad champagne or sparkling wine in a mimosa?
Right, it can be so bad that it makes a difference.
Because that's just gross.
It can be so bad that it makes a difference. But let's talk about. Give us an example of the kind of cocktail, because for people out there who may not be going to cocktail bars of late, it's really amazing that these cocktails are not coming even from just blends of different liquors. People are using juices and mints and mint and herbs and all sorts of things making real cocktails and raw eggs, egg whites, and cocktails.
Like I said, when I went to Cambridge, I went to the Rendezvous, which is a really very unassuming bar. It looks like it was like a former Chinese restaurant. I think actually it was a former Burger King, and they didn't do much to change it besides take out the plastic banquettes. But there was a bartender, a serious bartender back there mixing, and he had his drinks were divided up into savories and sweets.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the sweets are probably the more popular among people who love Cosmos and all the citrusy sweet drinks. But and he had them very simply called the cardamom cocktail, the mint cocktail. Like, you know, mm-hmm. It didn't sound like much, but they were mixed with bourbons and ryes. And speaking of ryes, I never saw so much great, great, great small batch rye as I did in Cambridge anywhere, not even in New York.
Well, now let's talk for a minute about something you sort of alluded to there. I think that a lot of guys think that, you know, cocktails are sort of like feminine, like a Sex in the City kind of thing. But there are some masculine cocktails out there. I mean, do you divide cocktails into the sort of the man's cocktail and the girl cocktail?
I think that if I had to make a generalization, I would say that cocktails made with white spirits have more mass appeal. And cocktails made with brown spirits definitely appeal to people who could drink heavier or heartier things, like, you know, like, not surprising, but like people who like dark beer like dark spirits, and people who like light beer love vodka. I mean, I don't think that's brain surgery, but, and that said, I don't know many women who drink Manhattans with me, but I know a lot of guys who drink, you know, scotches and ryes and bourbons.
By the way, Anthony, my wife has a bourbon Manhattan to ring in the first day
Beautiful.
Of fall every year.
I love her. And my mother actually was drinking Manhattan when she was pregnant with me, which could describe
that. That explains a lot. You know,
it
Anthony,
both my proclivity for bourbon and my height.
Yeah. In typical restaurant guys fashion, we have brought you on the show under the auspices of talking of your recent trip to Sicily, and now it's 45 minutes after the hour, and we haven't mentioned it yet.
We'll be back in just a moment talking more with Anthony Giglio, and we're really going to talk to him about his trip to Sicily, leading a group of culinarians all around, maybe by the nose, maybe not. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45.
Let me talk to you about lighting, and specifically about how you can enhance the appeal of any space. Lighting is a powerful, emotional, and aesthetic force. It's one of the most important elements of design. More than anything else, it sets the mood and tone for an entire experience. A room pops or it doesn't based on lighting. Lights on 9 is a top-notch commercial and retail lighting supplier. Lights on 9 supplied all the lights for our award-winning Catherine Lombardi restaurant, inside and out, dining room and kitchen. Lights on 9 has everything from tasteful and stylish chandeliers to table and floor lamps to outdoor lighting for illuminating a building or walkway or a sign. At Lights on 9, the service is exemplary, expert, and knowledgeable. They ship anywhere in the continental United States for free. Their retail store is in the Galleria Shopping Center on Route 9 in Manalapan. They're open 7 days a week. Call them at 732-308-9166. That's 732-308-9166. Or visit them at lightson9.com. That's lightson9.com.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants. Our guest today is Anthony Giuliano. Anthony, you recently took a group of people on a wine tour of Sicily. What was that all about?
Anthony Giulio.
I'm sorry?
Stay with me, man.
Sorry, no, actually, our engineer, or he was talking, we weren't hearing him. Whatever you said, can you say it again?
It was actually a wine tasting tour. There was, obviously, food was unavoidably there and delicious, but it was specifically a wine tour with a group called Authentic Sicily, a New York-based tour group that took a lot of, it was all consumer-based, with one journalist along for fun, but we landed in Palermo and circled our way south around the island to Taormina before we left. So we spent 9 glorious days tasting our way through Sicilian wines.
Now, Sicily is going through a bit of a wine renaissance, is it not?
Oh, it's tumultuous what's happened there in the last, now it's only been about 15 years since the cooperative system completely collapsed or was allowed to die by the Italian government after kicking and screaming for many years. Post-World War II, Sicily was actually the backwater of Italian winemaking, which was the complete opposite of where it was during the Greek and Roman empires when it was considered the land of wine. I mean, the name, it was used to be called Anatria by the Greeks, which meant the land of wine.
Now, you said the cooperative system fell apart, which was the system that kept the farmers alive in tough times, but then really kept them from doing anything great and allowed mediocrity to thrive. What's happened in Sicily to make the Renaissance happen there?
It moved from, the whole movement moved from Rome south when people like Mestre Berardino in Campania fought the government on breaking out of the cooperatives and saving indigenous grapes. And, Italy has more than 2,000 indigenous grapes. At least that's what's left of, God knows, it must have been 10,000 at one time. But, the Italian government during the 60s and 70s was pushing Chardonnay and Cabernet and Merlot to be grown everywhere.
I think a lot of people only think that there are 5 or 10 different grape varieties in the world, because that's all you ever see on wine labels. But when you talk about some of these smaller regions of Italy, and Sicily being one of them, that there are all these indigenous grapes that still exist and are still being blended into their traditional wines.
And just to sort of simplify it out there, I mean, most of Cabernet Sauvignon is a type of grape, Chardonnay is a type of grape. Well, there are many grapes, like in Sicily, like Aglianico and
Nero d'Avola.
Nero d'Avola, which are actual types of grapes that you don't find in California and that you sometimes don't find anywhere else but in the south of Italy.
Right, exactly. I mean, they're great. Like, Nero d'Avola isn't found anywhere else in Italy, period. Nerello Moscalese, Nerello Cappuccio, these are all grapes that are completely indigenous to the region, and they're probably brought there by the Greeks.
And the people for a long time looked on these as sort of second-class citizens of grapes, and how was it turned around for people to look in? These are sometimes very expensive, often tremendous bargains still, because they're a little more expensive than your average table wine, but they make phenomenal and age-worthy wines. Are these the historic wines being made again?
Yes, yes. That's exactly what it is. But they're historic only to their regions. And, because the South is so poor, that they never marketed themselves like, look how well Bordeaux marketed itself, that it's now, a brand unto itself. Champagne the same way. Burgundy. France had a different, a totally different history with wine versus Italy. And at least Italy's north had the money. Piedmont, we all know Barolo and, Barbaresco and Brunello's from Chianti, et cetera, but the South, completely poor, always, and then after the war, clobbered, completely clobbered. Italy produced 40% of all the wine in Italy, 40%, but all of it was turned into jug wine, vinegar, and siphoned off in quite often to the south of France and to Spain.
But at the same time, aren't we seeing some of these older varietals simply because they were poor, because they didn't have the money to pull up all their old vines and plant Cabernet Sauvignon everywhere?
Yep, exactly. We're very fortunate. And then, sadly for the people who maintain the grapes, it took big money from the north to come down, like the Antinoris, the Gaias, to come down to Sicily and start buying up property and teaching people how to regenerate these old grapes, and you know, science got involved, and it took a lot for the government to finally budge and help people along, because again, they basically were punishing people from doing anything productive with their grapes for 50 years.
Well, and you know, what's interesting is it's sort of like the same philosophy that you have in a lot of old areas in Europe. The places that were too poor to tear the buildings down in the 60s and 70s, we've passed through that era of bad taste where we had to knock everything down and build a new glass box, and there's a lot of richness that was preserved because unfortunately or fortunately, that they were too poor to rip them up.
Yep, it's absolutely true. The first night we spent was in the Abbazia Sant' Anastasia, which was an abbey, an 11th century abbey that had been in ruin until only 10 years ago.
That's amazing.
I mean, completely empty, like, you know, trees growing out of the windows.
Anthony, when we come back, will you talk to us about, like, what a day on one of these wine tours might be like?
I'd love to.
And when we do, we're going to tell you how you can get in touch with Anthony Giglio and maybe go to Sicily yourself and check it on out. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi. We're talking with Anthony Giglio and about trips that he leads in Sicily with consumers like you. What's a day like when you take consumers to Sicily to take them on a wine and food tour of a place that you know so well?
Besides really sunny and beautiful.
We have to be really careful, to not have too much wine at lunch. So we might actually do some touring in the morning.
Why is our tour guide napping?
I'm so sorry. There's nothing I could do. I'm a popular guy. People hear me on the air. They call. For instance, we started out on our third day. We went to Erice, which is a beautiful medieval town perched atop Monte Santo Giuliano, which you can actually see on a clear day. You can actually see North Africa from the top of these mountains that were on this medieval, beautifully preserved medieval town.
People might think that's nice.
And then there's the salt marshes below. We actually went through the salt marshes and saw how salt was produced on our way to Panetta, which was not a shabby place to drink some luscious, luscious wines, including, and here's where, you know, I'm a little conflicted. They actually make some extraordinary Chardonnay at Panetta. I mean, they've won, you know, Tributary Awards. The Spectator loves it. They make really mouth-watering, luscious, very fruity Chardonnays that aren't like, they're very different from California Chardonnays and much too powerful to be considered anything like Burgundy, but they're Sicilian Chardonnays nonetheless. And then they had the indigenous grapes as well. But that was just one of three properties. And then we would then from there head towards the next town we're going to stay in and then have either dinner in a restaurant or at a local winery, which we did. We went to Donna Fogata, which was just amazing, and had a beautiful night there. It was just really wonderful.
I think that I want to go.
we have two plans next year.
How do people find out about it, Anthony?
If you go to AuthenticSicily.com,
uh-huh.
There'll be tour information there, and you can ask for more information. You can also go to my website, which is AnthonyGiglio.com, which is AnthonyGiglio, just a few vowels there, .com. And there's my email. You can email me for any information you need, and I can give you more information that way, too.
And you actually go around with people and show them around?
Oh, yeah, we keep the group very small. We had no more than, I think, 18 people. So we're in this little mini bus, and we went to visit. You know, it just was crazy. Cooking schools and you know, a little bit of culture here and there. We're passing ruins and beautiful preserved Greek temples, and stopping for a picnic at one of the
we're gonna put a link up to all the information about Anthony Giglio, where you can find out about this on our website. Anthony, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thanks, Anthony.
Thank you, guys.
Super. I love him. He's the best. That's Anthony Giglio. He is the author of Cocktails in New York and the Mr. Boston All-New Official Bartender's Guide. So hope you've enjoyed the hour with the Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.